Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. What a dunk! Morning blocked his dunk!
Here's Wade against Green. Euro step. Basket.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm wearing another blog's t-shirt, and I'm opting out, Wes.
No!
Yeah, my time has come. I wanted to thank you for your incredible service over the last year or so, but you know what? It's time for me to explore other opportunities.
You know what, David? You just don't got the guts.
That's right.
You don't got the guts. It's really, but this is an opportunity for you to redefine your career and start playing through some injuries.
Yep, I'm going home.
So, all right. This is kind of an emergency / not emergency, hopefully. Dwayne Wade, free agency, trade rumors, NBA draft stuff podcast the day before the NBA draft. So we're going to get to a lot of stuff. We're going to get to some trade rumors, some rumors about people, well, not rumors, people that opted out and could possibly be linked to the Miami Heat. We'll get to some Goran Dragic stuff, and of course, we'll finish this off with NBA draft going into Thursday's draft, recording this on a Wednesday afternoon. But first, we got to start with all this Dwayne Wade to Cleveland gossip. So we've seen that Wade has followed a Cavaliers fan, allegedly. I haven't checked his follows, but that's what Twitter says, so it must be true.
It's been confirmed. They took a screenshot of it, and apparently, I can't remember the exact Twitter handle, but he tweeted out a picture to Dwayne Wade directly with a photoshopped image of Wade in a Cavs jersey, and Wade immediately followed him back. So that's the latest update on that.
Is that all it takes? Can I just, like, send a photo to Wade wearing, like, an All You Can Heat t-shirt or a Heat Check podcast shirt, and he'll be like, yep, follow you back?
Well, not anymore, but yeah, apparently that's the case. That would have been the case last year, maybe, when he was a Heat lifer.
That's true. I gotta try to Photoshop him in something and try to get a follow. Maybe like a Cavs hat? Kinda...
Do they have Cavs hats?
I don't know.
Like an old Pirate-style actual Cavaliers.
Ooh.
Like a Buccaneers-style hat, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like a musket or something. Or like, yeah, I don't even know what a Cavalier is, honestly, but...
Kind of like a musketeer-looking fellow, let's say.
So like a candy bar.
Well, that looks like something else, but we digress as we always do.
And Wade, I don't know where this was reported. I don't know how it happened, but it's been retweeted a few times. Wade bought a house in Cleveland, and apparently, I don't believe this for a second. This just seems like to me like something that just got floated out. What is your take on these things, David?
I'm a little skeptical. We saw so much of it last year, so I guess I'm a little jaded after following planes that did or didn't land in Miami International Airport, secret meetings that did or didn't happen, you know, packing up luxury cars and abandoning your house. Ultimately, I don't think any of those things matter. Like, I think we're trying to, you know, rationalize it because if we were moving to another job elsewhere, that's what we'd do. But the reality is these guys have so much money and they could do whatever the hell they want to. I don't know that Dwayne Wade and his relationship with, you know, Gabrielle Union, who's an actress who films her TV show in Atlanta and has connections to Los Angeles, is going to buy a house in Cleveland, even if he does wind up playing there. I mean, chances are he'd probably rent a house for a year or so. I mean, maybe if he did do that, it probably wouldn't happen until shortly, you know, before the season starts. You know, there's no reason for him to jump the gun and move in there. But aside from that, him following a fan, his dad wearing a Cavs t-shirt during a Sunday morning preach session, all these things they kind of reek of trolling the Heat fan base a little bit, right? And I don't think he's beyond that. As you and I think talked about in our last podcast in 2010, you know, he took a couple meetings with Chicago when he was possibly going back to his hometown team, when all the while it seemed like him, LeBron, and Chris Bosh had a deal to play in Miami, etc. So he's not above kind of, you know, being, let's say, a little playful with the whole thing, even though fans are worried, senseless, and everybody's, you know, attacking him. You know, you've got these two extremes, right? It's a little funny. It's almost like it's backfired a little bit because all of a sudden now people are attacking Pat Riley and the Heat front office. Some people are attacking Wade. And all the while, we don't even know what's happening. Nothing may have happened. Nothing may happen.
He hasn't even officially opted out yet.
Yeah, exactly. So it just seems a little premature. I'm not taking it all too seriously at this point. Although there's part of me that's kind of running to, you know, jump off a cliff at the whole news and everything else as it breaks. But I mean, we went through it last year, so maybe I'm just a little desensitized to it.
So I have a few theory. I have basically an overall theory on this. Is that It's not so much trolling the Heat fans. I think Wade actually does appreciate Heat fans, but it's almost like he's not stopping this stuff because he knows. I don't think he's leaking, like, you know, Wade buys a house in Cleveland or is, you know, purposely, like, following that. Honestly, I think he was just, like, interested in the Cleveland jersey picture, probably clicked on it and accidentally followed somebody, like we all have done on Twitter, accidentally follow somebody. And then it's, like, awkward. You don't want to unfollow them and because you accidentally, I don't know. But that's just a guess. It's a shot in the dark. But I think this stuff coinciding with Kevin Love opting out, it's like fans are, you wonder, is this kind of this whole orchestrated thing that we know Dwayne Wade is used to, where Kevin Love opts out, Dwayne Wade walks in, and that's the new Cavaliers team. But I think everything kind of happened together.
Right. I think everybody considered that he was going to opt out from, well, you know, as soon as he got traded for to Cleveland, he was expected to opt out, wasn't he?
Yeah, I just think like the day that it happens officially is also the day that some of this Wade stuff happens, and I think fans are maybe connecting those dots, and I don't know, like it doesn't make sense, but just everything happening on one day and just like this constant like negative rumor news, nothing like solid, nothing really defining or like, but just it's always negative. It's always anti-Heat, him going to Cleveland or LA or something like that. And it's just this constant bombardment of minor rumors just build up into something bigger. There's just big worry that maybe he is leaving. And so, like I said on the last podcast, it doesn't serve Wade any good to actually allow or leak any positive information for the Heat because that's just not how negotiating works. But it is worrisome when these things start happening. And that's why I start to get worried and freak out. And honestly, we've seen weirder things happen in sports, and we've seen similar things to this happen. I mean, Peyton Manning and the Colts had a very rocky endship, or end to their friendship. And we've seen Paul Pierce had to leave Boston and just because of the new change in management and coaching that happened there. We see long-term guys have bad endings with their former teams all the time. Just you wear out your welcome, or it's new ownership, or new management, or new coaching, or whatever it might be. It's not rare, so I don't know why Dwayne Wade and the Heat would be an exception to this. It's just like, or they're immune to this, like would be more accurate to say. I don't think that's true. Deep down, I think Wade resigns with the Heat. I just don't want to act like it's impossible that he leaves.
I don't know that anybody's taking that approach. I think most people tend to think that he's going to resign, or at least cooler heads tend to think that he's going to resign. But I won't, you know, strangely enough, I won't feel as caught off guard this time around as I was last year. Like, if you had asked me, even though I think it's much more realistic that LeBron would have signed elsewhere, there was no way that I thought he would ever go back to Cleveland, to be 100% honest with you. And I think that's part of what's left a lingering resentment for me. But when it comes to Wade, I won't be as caught off guard now because I think we've seen this degrade so quickly over the last month, or at least that's what the rumors all lead to, that there's some kind of broken relationship now between Pat Riley and the Heat front office and Dwayne Wade, so I won't feel as caught off guard, but I do agree that I think ultimately he will re-sign with the team. There isn't anything as favorable elsewhere. I mean, right? I mean, if we're going to just break it down very simply, I mean, he's comfortable here in Miami. He loves the team, the front office, maybe a little bit less so, but he has a good chance at success next year here. He definitely has a much better chance of getting paid here than anywhere else. You add all that up together, I just can't see anything else being as tempting an offer.
Well, let me just play devil's advocate then. I agree with you, but if this is broken between him and upper management, Pat Riley, basically, and we'll talk about that in a second, but Cleveland offers a chance to win. I mean, Cleveland was just in the finals with a broken roster. They're going to have Kyrie Irving coming back, Kevin Love presumably coming back, Timofey Mozgov there for a full season, Iman Shumpert, a very, very strong roster that's going to be Tristan Thompson, probably.
Possibly.
And basically just swap J.R. Smith for Dwayne Wade, and that's a kick-ass roster. And that is probably the best chance Wade would have on that kind of roster to getting back to the finals this year, like this upcoming year, right? So if he does leave the Heat and what he wants is to win a championship, I could see him taking a lot less money and just being like, well, I'm not going to take less money from the Heat than I think I deserve and not go anywhere. If I'm going to take less money, I might as well just take a major pay cut because I can basically make as much money as I want and at least compete and possibly win an NBA championship again, and just always have one more than LeBron James, I guess. Then it becomes like, well, the pride, it's still a pride thing. It's really not about the money, it's about the pride. So either he's got the money to prove his pride in Miami or a championship to back up his pride in Cleveland. And then on the flip side, you have LA, where if he's really thinking about that next phase in his career and he just decides, you know what, the hell with championships right now, I'm just gonna take a conscious step into the twilight of my career. I'm going to live in LA. I'll play some games with Kobe, but just maybe, you know, switch games with Kobe as like a tag team wrestling tandem and just get used to the LA scene, make my connections, retire in 2 years. And then just be a movie star or something. So, and then, you know, Gabrielle Union can do her thing. So, I could see that. But, like I said in the first place, I think he does resign. It's the best spot for him in Miami. But, because it's the best combination of winning and contending, or contending and money. But I do see where playing Cleveland or playing in LA does have some positives.
I don't see the LA connection. I mean, could he take a lot of money to go in L.A.? Yeah, but, I mean, he's going to get more money here.
It's definitely more the stretch. L.A. is definitely a stretch.
Yeah. It's more about, at that point, if he goes to L.A., it's more about he'd rather play anywhere but Miami. And then that's a possibility. I mean, we don't know what happened here. And that's part of the strange thing about all this is that, you know, there were a lot of secrets possibly in last year. When LeBron was, you know, possibly courting Cleveland at the same time as he was courting Miami. But at the end of the season, Dwayne Wade said he was going to opt into this contract here. There was no talk about him becoming a free agent. He was all on board with the 2016 plan, whatever that might have entailed. Everything seemed like it was perfectly in place. Chris Bosh was going to come back. There was almost a wink-wink kind of situation with Goran Dragic where he was definitely going to come back. So everything seemed really good. All of a sudden, then Lou Alding starts talking about opting out, and yeah, maybe you don't know exactly what's going to happen there. But for things to go from, I'm definitely opting in at the end of the offseason, to now I'll play anywhere but Miami, it seems like a big leap there. So, I mean, who knows what's really going on? I'm curious as to see what the situation was.
And we know something happened, right? Like, I do believe that there's this relationship between Pat Riley and Dwayne Wade has been fractured a little bit, and I'm kind of under the train of thought that where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't know how bad this has been fractured, but there's clearly something happening here. Like you said, we don't know what it is. My question is, if Wade comes back, that's going to take some sort of agreement, obviously. is this relationship something that can be repaired? Is this something that they're going to just say this was a business, it's a negotiation thing? Or is this something that both sides might take personally? It just might be kind of awkward. I kind of wonder where this is going to go if, like you've brought up many times on this podcast, the whole Alonzo Mourning thing, and that was kind of weird. And then Alonzo Mourning ends up with a job with the Heat when he retires. But you do wonder, maybe this is so near to where Dwayne Wade is retiring. I don't know. It's like, does he have that job waiting for him, or if he wants it even? Or, I don't know. I just feel like that relationship between Pat Riley and his players is very important. And I feel like more than once we've seen it backfire.
Yes.
And not been able to be repaired. LeBron James, most notably.
Absolutely. But
I kind of always go back to that whole outspoken speech where Riley basically challenged him to play the games and play through the pain. And, you know, you could see how Wade's like, well, hold on. You know, 2 years ago, you guys purposely sat me out in part of a maintenance program, and now you're bringing up those games that I missed in this negotiation and in public, but that was kind of our agreement that we were just kind of going to waltz through the regular season. And, you know, I could see why he would be, like, you would take it personally. It's you take these things personally.
People that are a lot more closely affiliated with the team or reporters that have covered Miami much more closely than you and I have all point to one thing, that this has gone far more public than they've ever witnessed throughout their history of covering Miami. And that scares me pretty substantially, and that somebody's clearly pissed off here. Feelings have been hurt, and we don't know. We assume that it's Wade's feelings because Riley tends to be very secretive about things like that. He doesn't express his feelings as publicly until he does it for maximum impact, usually at a press conference, et cetera, or when he makes that kind of off-the-cuff remark that he did about smiling faces and hidden agendas, et cetera. So clearly something has gone on here, and that's where the situation is. And I think, you know, we could probably take it back to, you pointed out something very, you know, astutely, that calling him out as far as his injury is concerned is probably a little offensive. And then you have to take into consideration the fact that they probably approached him and said, look, we know that you want to retire in 3 years. We're willing to offer you a 3-year deal so that you can be a part of, you know, the Heat for the rest of your career, but we'll only do it at $10 million. And that probably did strike a chord. And Ethan Skolnick is the one that first put out that $10 million amount. So if Wade didn't necessarily want $20 million or $23 million, whatever the max is, for them to say to him, opt out of your contract and we'll pay you just $10 million, that might have been where the insult offense took place, and that's probably where things have just started to degrade very badly, very quickly.
And the optimist in me says that the pissed off person is the agent who thought he was making 10% of a much larger piece of pie. And that Wade, being the client, can't really say anything positive. And he's been in the public eye. He's been on ESPN or ABC during the pregame shows and stuff like that. But now he's like caught in between because he doesn't want to say anything positive because of the negotiation aspects. And then he doesn't want to say anything negative because, which he also hasn't done, to his credit, hasn't said anything negative in person, in public, like in public, on Twitter, and social media, nothing. It's always been this stuff around him, right? But Chris Broussard did tweet earlier, let's switch gears a little bit, that if Wade does leave, well, that's at least the assumption, that the Heat would be interested in signing Monte Ellis, who also opted out officially. So, thoughts on that, Dave? Do you think Monte Ellis is a good fit if Wade leaves?
I think it's a terrible fit.
Okay.
I've just never been a big fan of his. I think that he's probably been the best version of himself that he possibly can be over his last whatever season or so with Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily saying much. A high usage player, not necessarily an efficient one, which is something that Miami has always taken pride in. I more realistically, though, is the fact that we can't even afford him. I think we'd have to clear so much cap space. We'd have to make a number of trades just in order to accommodate him for a very minimal amount. So I think a lot of people, again, and maybe closely related to what you said about Kevin Love, the timing just seems right. Chris Broussard, I mean, how seriously can we take anything that he says? He's always been inconsistent and inaccurate. So I don't know how seriously we can take him as an NBA insider, but he reported that there was mutual interest, but it just doesn't seem to make sense. I think a lot of people are saying, well, maybe we could make an even swap for Wade and Ellis, but I don't think that benefits anybody. Can Dallas be – is Dallas a lucrative opportunity for Dwayne Wade to continue his career? Maybe. But for Monte Ellis here in Miami, he doesn't seem to fit very well with what they're trying to do here. He would cost way too much money. I just don't see it. Personally, I'm not a big fan of his game overall. What do you think?
I'm a little higher on Monte Ellis. I think he played really well within Dallas's motion offense last season, particularly before Rondo got there. I thought he did a really great job as a ball handler and a passer. I thought he was less selfish than he normally is. But like, as you said, that's probably the best version of Monte Ellis we've ever seen. But then again, it was also probably the best coach he's ever played for, the best offensive structure he's ever been in. And a similar type of situation where he's got to stretch forward to run pick and rolls through and pick and pops with. Like with Dirk, he could do the same thing with Chris Bosh. A really strong pick and roll finisher, Tyson Chandler. He would have that in Miami with Hassan Whiteside. And having Monte Ellis and Goran Dragic as ball handlers in the backcourt would mimic a lot of what Wade and Dragic did last season when they played together, when it was either one of them handling the ball and running pick and rolls and things like that. So in that sense, I think it would work. He's not a good defender. The problem is the salary situation. If he's asking for $10 million a year or something even or above that, the Heat would have to clear so much space and get rid of so many players. I mean, this we'd have to assume, number one, Wade's gone, and Luol Deng is gone. And then when those two are gone, they probably still have to trade either Chalmers, Birdman, or Josh McRoberts to actually have enough space to keep any sort of flexibility with that roster. It would be really tough. But it also might be the best option for them, realistically, regardless of fit. But if they really wanted to replace or get as close to the talent level that they'd be losing in Wade, personally, I agree. I don't think it makes sense, considering, number one, the source, and that it's kind of early for, I think, the Heat to... It just doesn't really make sense for the timing. It's like Monte Ellis opts out, and all of a sudden the Heat are interested. Wade hasn't even made a decision yet. I really don't think the Heat would jump the gun on that in such a way. So that doesn't make sense to me.
And where would he get that kind of inside information at this point? Knowing that, let's assume that Wade's feelings are somewhat hurt by the whole negotiations process. Does Riley just completely misjudge how to handle this and have somebody within the front office kind of leak to Broussard, hey, let him know that we're interested in getting a guy like Monte Ellis, just to let Dwayne Wade know that he's not the only shooting guard out there. There are still other options that we'd like to bring in. I mean, that seems like that would be so badly mishandled. I don't think anybody in Miami would possibly ever do that. So how seriously can we take Chris Broussard? Probably not very seriously at all.
Multiple cans of sauces. Let's move
Speaking of sauces, right? I mean, Sauce Castillo.
There we go. Great segue, David. We've got a good two-man game working here. So, yeah. What do you think? Is he a good fit?
I'm not high on Nick Stauskas, and I think we should clarify what we're talking about here as far as
Nick Stauskas. We haven't even said Nick Stauskas. We haven't said his real name, have we?
No, yeah. We assume that everybody follows Heat Twitter or basketball Twitter as much as we do, and that they know who Sauce Castillo is.
What kind of sauce? What?
Sauce, yeah, exactly. We're talking about Nick Stauskas, the second year, or he's going to be in his second year now, yes. Shooting guard for the Sacramento Kings, right? Out of the University of Michigan.
Yep. He's a three-point shooter. He's white. He
fits a very prototypical mold as far as what you picture a three-point shooter should be.
Yes, he is the opposite of Dwayne Wade.
Yeah. He's Kyle Korver before he became Kyle Korver.
He's Kyle Korver before Kyle Korver got really, really good. And he's also not as tall. And he's also not Kyle Korver. I actually am high on Nick Stauskas, and I have been since he was coming out of college. I think this is maybe me being like a devil's advocate by nature, because the knock on him was always that he wasn't fast enough for the NBA, and my comment was, well, how fast do you have to be? Like, if you're the primary ball handler, I get it. If you, it's one of those things that's not necessarily a weakness, but was more of a strength, is if you're fast. Like, if you're Russell Westbrook, it doesn't, like, that's a strength for you, but it, you can be a slower player and be okay. Like, Kyle Korver, for example, nobody thinks he's fast. You wouldn't, fast is not one of the superlatives you would use for Kyle Korver, but I don't really have a, but if you can shoot and you have a knack for getting open, then you're fine. And that's what I think. And you can, and if you're a 3-point shooter in particular, you don't have to go from one end of the court to the other. People say, well, you have to be fast so that you can participate in the transition game. But if you're a 3-point shooter, you don't go from one end of the court to the other. Number one, if you're a guard, you're already backing up when the shot goes up. And a lot of times that's when transition happens. So you're already a 3/4 of the way down the court, right? You're either on your own 3-point line or you're backing up towards the middle of the court. And then if the 3-point shooter, you're usually trailing the fast break anyway, so you really only have to run a few feet. And you can and you're supposed to be behind everybody. So I don't understand why the speed thing. I might have just went off on a little bit of a rant there, but anyway.
Well, I think you're kind of looking to mix that up. You don't want any player being so one-dimensional that the only thing that they can do is shoot in this case. And that works for some players. It seems to have worked somewhat for Korver, but that's mostly because he's in constant motion and he knows how to get open, etc. Stauskas isn't that kind of player, at least not yet.
Right.
And so when you're talking about his speed, quickness, whatever, he's very, very one-dimensional. At least that's what I've seen. Maybe you've seen a little bit more, or maybe there's an upside there. But for one, right now, and we're talking about a very limited 1 year in Sacramento where there was a very bad team. They were kind of disheveled there for most of the season. They fell apart very quickly after they fired Mike Malone. He was injured, so maybe he just never really got into that kind of groove that everybody expects him to.
Well, I was actually breaking this down for a piece that I wrote, and after the All-Star break, he didn't shoot a great percentage for the season, but after the All-Star break, he shot 44% from three-point range.
Very good.
Which is very, very good. Would have been best on the Heat last season. So,
how many attempts per game, though, at that point?
I think it was like 2.3, I just want to say off the top of my head. But it was a nice amount.
And that was with Boogie Cousins hurt, though, right?
For part of that, yeah.
So maybe he needed to be a bigger part of the offense with Cousins out of the lineup.
Yep, and he still shot 44%. I mean, the percentage is what's important. So, and I actually disagree. I don't really have a problem with a one-dimensional player if you're paying him $2 million a year. You know, right. You know, Udonis Haslam's making almost, he's making 2.8 next season, and we would say he's one-dimensional, right? Like, if that, right? So, like, love you, UD, but...
half-dimensional at this point.
Half-dimensional. I mean, Zoran Dragic, how many dimensions does he have? He's making $1.5 million next year. So, Henry Walker, $1.1 million, and I don't even know what his dimension is. So, he's just a volume shooter, but the shots just don't go in. So, I actually don't have a problem paying a 44% 3-point shooter $2 million a year just to do that. I don't have a problem with that. As long as you're not asking him to, if Wade leaves and you're asking him to be Dwayne Wade, that's not what we want. But paying the backup shooting guard and then not having to draft Devin Booker, right, because that's not a need anymore, and being able to go focus on another area of need, maybe drafting a Frank Kaminsky or Kelly Oubre, who we love, like, that might be the value there. So if you could trade Mario Chalmers to the Kings, who need a point guard, for and maybe their second-round pick or something like that for Nick Stauskas?
I'd be sad to see Chalmers go, but that's just because I'm reluctant to change and I have a hard time with it, but that's just a personal
issue. Well, we're the last people on Chalmers Island. I'm still in on Chalmers. I still think he could be sixth man of the year.
Showed flashes last year. There's just the same issues that he's always displayed: inconsistency, immaturity, bad decision making.
Yep.
All the things that you don't want out of
all the thing guard. We love out of Rio. I chalk up the inconsistency to the inconsistency with his position. We didn't know if he was a starting shooting guard, the starting point guard, the sixth man, the backup point guard, the backup shooting guard. We had no idea what he was. So, and he didn't have, like, they didn't know. So, maybe in a more regular offense with Dragic and Wade, and him just being the third guard there.
Not to go on a tangent here, but I'm starting to notice now is that a lot of, like, basketball writers like you and I tend to really gravitate towards players that have, like, either a major weakness, either psychological or physical.
Yep.
And kind of, like, idolize these players that have something very wrong with them. And I think most casual fans all want, you know, an all-star lineup, constructed of nothing but perfect players that give 110%, all the incredible cliches that you could heap on a sports player. But then you look at a guy like J.R. Smith, and he's a nightmare to watch, and yet he's beloved. You know, Dion Waiters, Mario Chalmers, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on. Even Boogie Cousins, you know.
Yeah, but these are more like laughing at them, not laughing with them. We're just entertained. We love basketball so much that we understand that there's an entertainment. Like, I think because we're a little bit more objective that we can appreciate the flaws because we're just being entertained by the flaws, where, like, a diehard fan is just like, you're right. They just want all their players to be perfect and to stop screwing up, because if they lose, it ruins the rest of their night.
Maybe you're right.
But I agree with you.
It was worth pointing out there.
It's 100% accurate, and I think that's my thing with Chalmers. But because we would miss him, right? If he left, who would be the new Chalmers? Every team has a Mario Chalmers.
I'm hoping Napier fills that role. I could see him being yelled at.
Yeah, that's actually a really good... If Henry Walker's still around...
Well, maybe I mean, him? They're both championship-winning point guards in college. I mean, it kind of fits perfectly. You know, the adjustment period's there. We don't know quite what Napier's role is going to be after his rookie season. We didn't know that with Chalmers, where he was a starter, a bench player, etc. I mean, there's some boneheaded, you know, aspects to both players. I think it works out great. You know,
I think you're right.
Napier would be the new Chalmers.
And he's the first-round pick, too. He's the first-round pick since LeBron, so we already have that that unreasonable expectation.
There you go.
Perfect. So we've settled that. speaking of Mario Chalmers, rumors swirling that the Heat are looking to ship away Chalmers and Chris Anderson.
And Josh McRoberts.
And Josh McRoberts. Or Josh McRoberts and or the 10th overall pick. In order to clear some cap room. So the first report I saw was Chalmers and Bird. And then it was within the last few hours or couple days or so that I saw pairing McRoberts up with the 10th pick to move out of that pick and to shed that McRoberts salary. So a couple things I have an issue with here. McRoberts is a good player. I don't understand why you'd have to pair the 10th pick with that. With him in order to shed that salary. It's like, it's not really like you're convincing somebody to take McRoberts. If the Heat want McRoberts gone, it's more just to sign Wade or Dang, who they already, you know, just to re-sign those guys. But McRoberts is a good player that could be used in a lot of different teams.
I think there's just too many questions about what value he brings at his current contract. I mean,
and his health.
Yeah, exactly. When you look at, you know, how much they paid him, it was under the aegis of, you know, re-signing LeBron James and having him be kind of, you know, the Boris Diaw, as you refer to him many times, the Swiss Army knife of versatility there. And we saw that work very well for the Warriors this past season. And so you want that kind of, as the league expands more and more to players that fit a number of roles and do a number of things very well, can defend a number of players, etc. McRoberts is very attractive, but then he gets hurt. You don't know whether or not he's going to revert back to the player he was when he was being tossed around Portland and Orlando and Indiana and the Lakers, etc., whether or not he reverts back to that journeyman status. And so asking a team to take on his $5 million of salary over the next 3 years of his contract, that's a little too much. And so maybe sweetening the deal with adding a 10th pick could be enough to entice maybe a team like San Antonio or somebody else who's looking to trade up.
I can see, San Antonio might be a little far down in the draft. I could see maybe if the Heat wanted to move down to, like, the Hawks at, like, 14 or something, or the Suns at 13, where you just move down a few picks, and those are teams that could certainly use a McRoberts type. That I don't know if I necessarily have as much of a problem with, but I also like Josh McRoberts a lot. I'd like to see the Heat stick with him at least to the trade deadline. It might be harder to trade him then. But I think at least you know, like, he could, McRoberts at his salary, it could be a little bit of an overpay, but he could also be really, really valuable. Like, we're paying Chris Anderson $5 million and McRoberts $5.5. I don't think there's any doubt who's more valuable when they're healthy. And the chances of, and they probably have, McRoberts probably have a better chance of being healthy next year than Birdman. So I'd like to at least see them wait it out to the trade deadline. Of course, if it comes down to trading McRoberts or keeping Dwayne Wade and paying Dwayne Wade, then I'd say trade McRoberts and pay Dwayne Wade. But I'd rather them be able to clear Chalmers and or Birdman first, if we get to choose.
Can we agree that this is a very bad look for Miami, that they seem – there's a reek of desperation about this team right now, isn't there?
I wonder – yes. To answer your question, yes. But I wonder where this is – like, is this reporters –
looking to stir things up.
And feeding on, yeah, kind of smelling blood in the water and seeing that they're looking to trade Chalmers and Bird or McRoberts. Like, regardless of if Dwayne Wade was opting in or opting out, we could assume that they might have tried to unload Chris Anderson. We could assume that they might have tried to unload Mario Chalmers now with Dragic in this, and Napier, you know, going into his second year. And we assume that this team could look to move Josh McRoberts. Now that they really have a more – McRoberts was like a desperation move post-LeBron, but now we kind of have more of a solid roster and understanding of where this team is going with Hassan Whiteside and Chris Bosh. Like, that's our front court, not Bosh and McRoberts. So you can kind of see, like, okay, that McRoberts thing was fun, but we're kind of going in a new direction with this Whiteside fella. Let's see what we could get from McRoberts. So we can also assume that individually, it makes sense that the Heat would have tried to unload those guys, and – I think people might be jumping the gun, maybe connecting dots, or might be a better way to put it, but that they're trying to unload that salary in order to sign Wade, and that could also be the case. They might be it could just be a two birds with one stone type situation.
And I think a lot of opposing fan bases like seeing the Heat fans and the Heat front office kind of in this bad state because, you know, clearly 2010 rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and I think everybody wants to see the Heat get their comeuppance, so to speak. So these things could all be exaggerations. We could come out of this offseason smelling like roses where everything works out wonderfully and, you know, Wade resigns, Luol Deng resigns, Chris Bosh is perfectly healthy, we get a good draft pick, et cetera, et cetera. But for now, when all these rumors are kind of building and building and nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, I think a lot of people are kind of overjoyed at this bad look, so to speak. So it's just an interesting perspective.
Can we just talk for a second about how no other fan base even wants Dwayne Wade? Like, the Knicks rumors happened, and Knicks fans were just like, no, we don't want Dwayne Wade. And the Cavs are like, I don't want Dwayne Wade. And the Lakers are like, I don't want Dwayne Wade. It's like, it's Dwayne Wade. Like, what is this? Am I, like, just an irrational fan of the Heat and I don't, and Dwayne Wade's, like, a lot worse than I think he is? Or was he extremely efficient and scored a lot of points and is a master in the post? Like, I have been watching him the last forever.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? Is it because he's injured all the time? Is it, what's happening here?
I think,
this is Dwayne freaking Wade.
The more I connect with fans across the country of different teams as a result of writing about different teams, etc., the more I realize that people are irrational fans of their team.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who is on the roster. Like, there are people that think, and this might be true, but that Rudy Gobert is the best player ever and that Hassan Whiteside comparisons are ludicrous. And, of course, these are Utah fans. And so they didn't know that Hassan Whiteside was historically great last season for big stretches there and that he might have had the overall better season than Rudy Gobert. But they followed their team. They followed their young prospect.
But those are relatively unknown prospects. But when it comes to a guy like Dwayne Wade, who's been in the league forever, who's proven time and time again that he's good.
You're right. But what do you see, though? You see him in the finals. The lasting image a lot of people have of Dwayne Wade is the 2014 finals when he didn't show up because he wasn't physically able to do so. And so that's, strange as it might seem, a lot of people think that, that, you know, that Wayne is still broken down. They hear talking heads like Charles Barkley say, he's never going to get better. He's constantly injured. He's done. This is not the player he was. And you ignore the fact that he played 62 games of incredibly efficient basketball. And so you criticize him as an all-star without realizing that he's one of the leading scorers in the NBA, that he's the top scorer in the fourth quarter, et cetera. You, I mean, you know these things. I know these things. Heat fans know these things because they watch him for as many games as he performs. Everybody else doesn't. They think he's washed up, and it's easier to accept this kind of narrative than to do the process of researching how effective Wade might be on a regular basis, watching those games in which he performs, and seeing that, in fact, he does play very well. But you're right. It's very startling to think a Hall of Fame player that you wouldn't want somebody like that. I mean, people were clamoring for Ray Allen last year.
Right. Every team wanted Ray Allen. A lot of teams want Paul Pierce. This is what I have a problem with. I understand teams not wanting to pay him the max, but when we're talking about Cleveland, when we're talking about the Lakers and the Knicks, a lot of, we're not really talking about max deals. They're just talking about signing him. And not, I haven't really seen, maybe I haven't seen it, but I haven't seen like Knicks thinking about paying Wade $23 million a year.
Dude.
So it's like,
it feeds right into the whole Knicks is a failed franchise, they don't know what they're doing kind of narrative. But again, to my point, what's the lasting memory you have of Paul Pierce? Hitting clutch threes in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this past year, and maybe that's not you, but I'm saying that for most fans elsewhere, the lasting impression they have is him in Washington. He was the only reason that they had a chance in any of those games. He was knocking down clutch threes. He was taking that big shot down the stretch. He's the kind of guy you want on your roster. Not Dwayne Wade, who misses a whole bunch of games and falls apart against San Antonio. Never mind the fact that he scored 23 points per game and he shot nearly, you know, 50%. Whatever. Those things are, who cares about that? That's science. That's numbers. We don't want to pay attention to that. He's washed up, and it's easier to believe that than it is anything else. So that's just, it's disturbing, right? And you're right. Ray Allen, that's another one. I mean, he was going to be the missing piece on everybody's team last year. L.A. wanted him. The Cleveland Cavaliers wanted him. He was going to go to every team and be at, oh, San Antonio, and this is a team that doesn't make bad decisions.
Golden State, Washington.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody wanted Ray Allen, even though he's 39 years old. But what's the lasting memory? Him hitting, you know, 2013, Game 6, et cetera, et cetera.
Meanwhile, those guys could have just traded for Nick Stauskas. They would have just signed.
Exactly.
All right, let's talk about this Dragic stuff really quick, and then we'll get into the NBA draft.
Okay.
So we first heard a report that the Heat were prepared to offer him in excess of $80 million for 5 years. A lot of people kind of misread that and thought, what, they're offering him $80 million? No. Mark Stein reported in excess of $80 million. There seems to be a major split on Dragic. I mean, I hate to use the word polarizing because it's Goran Dragic. But people are either really low on him or really high on him. And I think it's because this whole max situation, max contract situation, it's like he's not worth the max. And I think every time we talk about, is X player worth the max, you either get guys like, hell no, I would never pay him that much, or yeah, he's worth it. So I think $80 million, if we're starting low, or $80 million really, it sounds high to a lot of people. Or it sounds like not nearly enough for the Heat to keep him because he's going to be in demand from like the Lakers and the Knicks. So it's kind of an interesting situation here with Dragic, at least the way things are being reported. So, and then we had that other report where it's more like $90 million or $100 million over a five-year contract. Important note, the Heat are the only team that can offer Dragic a full five-year deal. Any other team can only offer him 4 years. The Heat can offer him up to $115 million. Any other team can only offer him up to $85 million over 4 years. So we're talking about a $30 million difference. If you want to do the accounting that way, even though it's over one additional year than those other smaller contracts. But basically, Dragic has officially opted out as we've expected. We're seeing numbers that we've expected. Are you concerned about anything right now?
Well, I think, first of all, I think he's worth the money.
I agree.
I think from everything that we saw of him last year, and again, he dealt with some injury, but that team was just falling apart. We didn't see him at full strength, nor did we see a team at full strength working with him over the offseason, learning his timing, etc. We saw him even adjust his timing from when he first started. Remember, he first came in, and then he had that kind of up-tempo speed that he'd been used to, and he thought that was going to work in Miami. And when you've got players falling apart, and you've got Dwayne Wade maybe a step slower than you're used to thinking of him, that didn't work, and all of a sudden he takes a step back and he starts slowing down. He feels
he wanted to go 90 miles an hour when he got here. The Heat were going 50 miles an hour, and they finally kind of found a rhythm. They caught up to each other, and they were going about 65, 70 miles an hour by the end of the season.
And that was when they hit their best stretch too. You saw Dwayne Wade, you know, play really well for that month. I want to say it was late February, early March, when he went to the Cavs and then Portland, etc. I mean, that was a really good stretch there, and Dragic was a big part of that. And from all the people who watched him and followed him closely in Phoenix, they adore Dragic's game. So he's definitely a big part of this team moving forward if he resigns. And he's definitely worth that kind of money. Maybe not max, 100-something plus million dollars, but below that, I'd say he's worth it. He's a very good player. People are just looking at numbers. He doesn't have the big name. He's a foreign player. Maybe that has something to do with it. He's never been an all-star, et cetera, et cetera. These things kind of add up, and again, it's easier to accept that narrative than to realize that he does make a huge impact on the team. But if you're asking me whether or not I'm concerned about whether or not he re-signs with the team, I don't know that he'll necessarily re-sign if Dwayne Wade doesn't, right? I don't know that anybody... I mean, Chris Bosh is already here. He's already got a lucrative contract. But I don't know that Goran Dragic wants to accept the responsibility and the pressure from the Heat fan base that people will heap on him for taking over, theoretically, Dwayne Wade's spot on the roster.
Wouldn't that be wild? Just a year ago, we had LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And within 2 years, it could be Goran Dragic, Hassan Whiteside, and Chris Bosh.
I wouldn't necessarily be upset with that, because I think Whiteside has a lot of upside, and I think Dragic is a great player. I think they're still a playoff team in the Eastern Conference with that.
Well, I think Dragic would resign regardless of what happens with Wade, and I kind of have gone back and forth on this, but if it's between the Heat without Wade, but also giving him a full, and we know what would happen, right? If there would be no good negotiation, it'd be the same thing as with when LeBron left and the Heat just gave Chris the negotiation was over. It was got Bosh on the phone. Here's the 5-year maximum money, no questions asked, right? If Wade left, you would 100% do that with Dragic.
I disagree.
Really? I don't know. Should they do it or would they do it? I don't know if they should, but they absolutely would.
I disagree on both counts. I think you and I both agree that they shouldn't do that, that it locks him into a lot of money, and we don't know where he's going to be in 5 years. But I don't know that they would do that either. I think they could, you know, see what happens without Dragic, without Wade, and kind of just start to rebuild. I don't know. I really don't see it. I mean, maybe
the other thing is with Dragic is, like, let's say he does go and test for agency. He's going to go to the Knicks. Is that a better roster? It's like, yeah, the Heat don't have Dwayne Wade, but the Knicks got who? Like Carmelo Anthony? Do you want to play with him? Not really. And then where else? The Lakers? Like, you're not going to play with Kobe and Jordan Clarkson and whatever.
Julian Randle.
Julius Randle, but it's just like, you know, the Heat still remain the best option. And if we think about to the trade deadline, he wanted the ball in his hands. He wanted to control things, the tempo, and he wanted a fast tempo. And he wanted a lot of money over a lot of years. And he'd still have all those things with or without Wade. So okay. I do think that it's still the best situation for him, and he will resign regardless of what happens with Wade. But who knows?
Okay, so what if Miami sticks to their offer and says, look, Wade or no Wade, we're only going to give you 5 years, $90 million. Dragic takes that deal so he can stay in Miami and be, quote-unquote, the man here?
Yeah.
Or does it take more money in order to lure him back to Miami?
It might take $100 million. Yeah, I think at that point, you play like the agents play the negotiation. It's like, well, you don't have Wade anymore. We're gonna need another, you know, $10 million over the length of this contract. And I think that the Heat would do that. Maybe we're not talking about the full $115 million,
right?
But you know, $15 million less than that. I think we're starting to get into that ballpark. Right now, I think we're in that $80 to $90 million ballpark. If Wade leaves, I think we're into that $90 to $105 million ballpark. But that's just me guessing. I mean, just thinking about how an agent might go about negotiating that thing. They would definitely use the Wade attrition as a leverage tool.
And then this might be my own perspective as a person outside of basketball who's not a superstar basketball player. But I mean, don't you think that there's going to be an incredible amount of pressure for Dragic in the eyes of whatever fans remain in the team? I mean, that's the thing I've seen a lot of, is that people are so torn about this Dwayne Wade situation, you know, whether or not you're supporting the front office for whatever reason, whether or not you support the players for whatever reason, and that if Wade leaves, all of a sudden you've got this guy Dragic.
I don't think it would. I don't know.
Lingering resentment there, wouldn't there?
I don't think Dragic is the guy that would absorb that pressure. That pressure will be out there and will need to be absorbed, but it won't be him. Just, they look very different. The way they carry themselves are very different. He barely speaks English. He's not a superstar, right? Like, he's got that. I do think he's a superstar quality player. He just doesn't carry himself in that way. Wade is a celebrity, right? Dragic is not a celebrity. But we think about, I think, who gets a lot of that pressure is more on Chris Bosh. I know he got that pressure after LeBron left. I think even more of that would be heaped on him if Wade left. And then if he even stuck around, if he didn't just demand a trade outright, but who knows. But I think it would be less Dragic and more Hassan Whiteside, I think. Hassan Whiteside is really the star, right, on that team. He's the budding star. I think people would look at him as the future, not so much Dragic as the present and future. I think that pressure would be absorbed by more Bosch and Whiteside, guys who are more celebrity-like, more who carry themselves, have more bravado than Dragic, who just seems like he goes about his business and just wants to play basketball, you know what I mean, and just get paid lots of money for it. But he's not celebrity-like.
I think you're thinking of it in terms of people who are much more hardcore fans and more deeply loyal to the team or follow the team much more closely. Like those fans at the periphery, and these are the ones that represent the bulk of most fan bases, is peripheral fans. They're going to see this team that, you know, 2 years ago had, as you just pointed out, the big three, was down one of those last year, kind of knows a little bit about this Whiteside kid, but not really. And then all of a sudden you've got a team with no Dwayne Wade, and you've got Chris Bosh, you remember, and then who's this Goran Dragic guy that's getting paid $90 million, $95 million, $100 million, whatever. I think a lot of the pressure would be on him. Whiteside, again, he's going to keep dunking and electrifying crowds. You know, a lot of people will still like to see what they do from him. But Goran Dragic is in a 30 points per game score. And so you're going to wonder, well, that's what we used to have in Dwayne Wade when we paid him that much money. Why aren't we getting that out of Goran Dragic? And I think that's where a lot of the resentment starts to take place. We don't know. I mean, we're only supposing it would happen.
It could go right to whoever the Heat draft at 10. Just be like, well, Wade's out. You're in. What do you got, kid?
I don't know. I don't think there's enough hype. I think Miami fans, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but I think a lot of Miami fans have been kind of conditioned not to care about the draft because it's never been a real source of talent for this team. I mean, even when we got Dwayne Wade or when we got
Of the superstar talent, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a possible source of it, but I don't know that anybody's really looking at the 10th pick this year and saying this is the player who's going to turn around the franchise. And I don't know that anybody would care if Devin Booker is the guy next year or Kelly Oubre is the guy instead of Dwayne Wade.
I just don't really know how casual fans really feel. Like, yeah, I guess I'm really out of touch. Because,
yeah, I mean, look, I've told you this before. I know it's a terrible gauge. My mother is the casual fan. When I want to think about what the casual fan thinks of, I ask her. She asks, like, ridiculous questions that you and I scoff at. But she represents, like, the voice. She hears things on local news. She sees kind of things on the newspaper. People talk about it in water coolers, etc. This is the casual fan. This is what, you know, 9 out of every 10 Heat fans thinks about. It's like, oh, that Whiteside, he sure is tall. Boy, can he dunk. And then who is this white kid from Europe that I've heard so much about? What's his name? Dragon? Goran? Gorach? What's his name again? These are what people think about, the casual fan. So I think you're going to see this guy making a ton of money next year in Dwayne Wade's absence. The pressure's going to fall on him. I mean, that's just, you know, again, I can't speak for whatever, you know, however million number of Heat fans there are in South Florida that are casual fans, but that's my opinion about what a casual fan is.
Do we think he can? I guess it's more of a question of how does he react to that hypothetical pressure? And I think Dragic is good enough. He's got the ability where he could just go out and play basketball and be just fine, just do his own thing. I don't know that that pressure would necessarily bother him. I just don't see him as a guy that's necessarily bothered by that stuff. I view him as just a guy, and maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong here, but I just view him as a guy who just goes out there and wants to play basketball his way. And he wants to play fast, and he wants to have fun doing it, and that's what he does. And he just likes playing basketball. So, and he obviously wants to get paid a ton of money because he's good.
If he goes 4 of 19 at the American Airlines Arena and he starts hearing smattering of boos, you don't think that's going to throw him off a little bit after he just resigned here for 5 years?
I think it would, but I don't think it's something that would just devastate him and he'd just go 4 of 19 every night. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's got bad nights. And I think the Heat are an organization, and as long as there's veterans on that squad like Bosch and things like that that can help him out with it and help him understand the fan base. And you know, I'm sure he got booed when he was in Phoenix.
I don't think so.
When
I
really if don't. He had a bad, or maybe I not. I guess you're right. You're right. But yeah, I mean,
because yeah, I'm just saying. You know, look, let's say again, Wade leaves, and I know this is a huge theoretical here. He leaves. All of a sudden, you've got last year's bullshit Heat Lifer campaign, and all of a sudden, you're going to see, you know, dark lighting and weird sweaty bodies and strange areas all over South Florida of Chris Bosh working out and Goran Dragic working out, and people are going to be like, huh, I guess that's the new face of the team, right?
Yeah.
And then when he doesn't perform the kind of way that Dwayne Wade has for 12 years, where he's hitting clutch shots and driving to the hoop and finishing off with monstrous dunks, people are going to be like, this is the face of the team. And that does... I think that's going to – I mean, those are going to be unfair expectations because that's not the kind of player he's supposed to be, and you and I know that. But for the other fans that see these ludicrous marketing campaigns to start next season, that's where the pressure starts to come from. And that's – you know, again, we're hoping that's not the case. We're hoping Wade resigns, Dragic resigns, everything's hunky-dory. But if it doesn't, I don't know that – if Wade doesn't resign, I don't know that Dragic is willing to accept that simply for the money. I don't know.
Well, let's switch gears here to the NBA draft.
Okay.
We just got an alert. Woj is reporting that Portland is finalizing a trade to send Nick Batum to Charlotte for Noah Vonleh and Gerald Henderson.
Who just opted in.
Correct. And what's this next thing that Woj just tweeted? Sources: Blazers didn't make deal as first step of rebuilding. Aldridge was aware of trade, and Blazers did deal independent of free agency. So basically not saying that this deal means that they're unloading everybody. So Nick Batum going to the Hornets. Hornets pick 9. Might have needed a small forward. Not anymore. That could leave a guy like Stanley Johnson or Kelly Oubre on the board by the time the Heat pick. So let's talk about the draft.
So yeah, and also Matt Barnes, who they just acquired in the Lance Stephenson trade. I guess his days are probably numbered as well, right?
Didn't he opt out?
I thought he still had a 1 year left. I haven't heard anything. So if you heard he opted out, that's certainly a possibility.
I'm not sure. I can't check things. But
I thought he was going to get bought out or waived outright.
Something like that, maybe. But either way, now they have Nick Batum. So now I think the latest mocks have had Charlotte taking Devin Booker. A lot of Heat fans want Devin Booker. We want Kelly Oubre.
You and I do. All you can eat is not, apparently.
Right, that's right. They want Devin Booker, too. So, but I want Kelly Oubre. And basically, that whole post was about how I want Kelly Oubre, and the staff at All You Can Eat sucks, and they voted for Devin Booker, and I had to write that stupid post on dumb Devin Booker anyway. I actually like Devin Booker a lot, and I've kind of...
Yeah.
I'd be perfectly fine if he drafted him, but I don't like when people disagree with me. So... which really doesn't make me cut out for any of this stuff, but
that's right.
Anyway,
so all of a sudden, because so Mario Hezonja or Stanley Johns could fall into our lap at 10.
If the Heat draft Mario Hezonja, well, okay, never mind. The Heat are not drafting Mario Hezonja.
You're sure of this?
Positive.
Why? I mean, Willie Cauley-Stein could go up a little higher. Stanley Johns is a more ready player. I mean, maybe some of those teams in the top 7 might be scared of the European prospect. Especially if Porzingis is going to be the guy. Kristaps Porzingis has, you know, got everybody drooling there, foaming at the mouth. You know, there's only so many players that can go in the top 10, and so far there's about 20 of them that are options at times. I mean, Cameron Payne's going to be there at the top 10 for some in some mock drafts. It's ridiculous. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Frank Kaminsky is another player there, a stretch four that everybody loves potentially. I mean, realistically, right, I mean, you and I have been following a lot of mock drafts. We've seen at least 15 players that are going to be in and out of the top 10 at some point. Some people have Stanley Johnson going 11th or 12th, Devin Booker going as high as 15th or 17th. Other people have him going 9th to, you know, to Charlotte, who has an obvious need for shooting. But there's a possibility that Cauley Stein drops a little bit. Maybe Stanley Johnson drops a little bit. These are all options. I think Stanley Johnson drops, and I think Miami winds up selecting him at 10.
Yeah, I think that's who the pick likely is. But there's kind of like these, the same similar names that we've been talking about, right? Stanley Johnson, Devin Booker, Kelly Oubre, Frank Kaminsky. You know, Miles Turner has been mocked to us in a few times, Texas center. It's kind of the same faces that we keep seeing. But realistically, I've also seen Mario Hezonja drop, and I just don't think the Heat would draft him. I just don't think he doesn't have the attitude that Pat Riley is going to want to put up with or Eric Spoelstra is going to put up with. I know that he's kind of like hyped and everything, and that his highlight videos are great, but my view with him is I'd rather miss on him and let some other team hit big with him than just completely derail everything because and have a cancer in the locker room.
It's interesting because, you know, to the point I made earlier where people just love flawed players or writers, bloggers, etc. love flawed players. Like, everybody's talking about him because he's an arrogant prick, right? I mean, right. And this all of a sudden makes him, like, uber enticing on your team, which is very bizarre because in real life you don't say, wow, that guy's the biggest jerk. I can't wait to hang out with him. But for a guy like Hezonja, you know, all of a sudden he's like, he's very arrogant. He doesn't get along with his coaches in Europe. He's a 19-year-old kid who hasn't proven anything at any level, and yet he thinks he's the best player on his team. And he might very well be at least the most talented player, but all of a sudden everybody thinks that he's going to be, well, you know, appreciated by front offices. And that's the exact opposite of the kind of people that they want, right? They want good soldiers. They want people who fall in line, who listen to their coach. They right. don't want a situation like LeBron undermining Coach Blatt, et cetera. I mean, front offices don't look at his own just attitude and go, yes, that's the kind of cocky attitude I want to undercut, you know,
right.
Eric Spoelstra, and this isn't, makes him play.
And this isn't like superstar, big name, arrogant right. guy that – this isn't Johnny Manziel, right? It's not like he's got the star power that the casual fans will at least identify with and will sell tickets. Most casual fans are like, Mario who?
Yeah.
So, and us on basketball Twitter just watch highlights and actually read quotes from reports of interviews and things like that. Like, we are deep diving on these guys because we're interested and we care for whatever reason. Most fans don't do that. Most fans don't even read a lick of information before the draft. They probably don't even watch the draft. They just get an alert on their phone about who their team drafted, right? So, or they just find out around the water cooler the next day at work. And most guys would be like, Mario Hezonja, what is that?
Right.
Why did we? Where is he from? So it's not like a team is going to be like, we don't want to have this guy. He's super talented, but he's not going to listen to our coaching, but he's got the star power. He's going to sell tickets. Let's do it. Let's draft Johnny Manziel. It's not going to be that situation. I think that I do see him falling because I think you're right. Coaches are going to be like, I can't. Don't. Please don't give me that guy.
Right.
And for the most part, I think GMs listen to that. So it's – I think I see him falling, and I definitely don't see – if he's there at 10 when the Heat are picking, I don't see them taking him, especially with other guys on the board because – really this you have like this top 7 or 8 and I don't consider Hezonja a part of that. And after that, between like 8, 9 and like 15, 16, it's a crapshoot. It doesn't matter. So saying that Hezonja is gonna fall out of the top 10 and get picked at 16 isn't really a knock. It's not like there's a big talent gap. It's very realistic that the guy that gets picked at 16 can also be picked at 10 and vice versa. All these guys are kind of in the same tier. So Yeah. By the time 10 hits, I think there's still going to be a lot of guys on the board that the Heat would favor over Hezonja. I think we're talking Cameron Payne, Frank Kaminsky, Kelly Oubre, Devin Booker if he's there. I mean, these are all guys that might not be as high as Hezonja on our draft boards or on, you know, the experts, quote-unquote, draft boards, but guys that the Heat would rather pick.
And I was just thinking about that, too, because I'm trying to think, you know, Riley's been quoted as saying, I like the homegrown product.
Right.
You know, meaning that he likes American-born players. He wants U.S. players. He doesn't want to take a chance at a European player because he's been burned in the past, et cetera. So his own just seems like a very unlikely. It would have to be such a complete 180 from his history with the draft that I mean,
realistically thinking, right, like, if Porzingis falls, which is not, to 10, and Kaminsky's there at 10, I would feel very uncomfortable putting money on the Heat drafting Porzingis over Kaminsky, just given the track record. Right? I think they would draft Kaminsky over him.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that because I'm thinking to myself now, I just went on record, you know, whatever, saying that they would take Stanley Johnson when he drops at 10. But that's based on the fact that we think he has a higher upside. But in reality, that's not how Riley drafts. He wants guys that are proven. Like, look at him. I mean, making a move for Napier may have had a lot to do with appeasing LeBron James, but it didn't hurt that he was a proven four-year player, which is the kind of guy he wants. I mean, when he even says one of the appealing things about Dwayne Wade was that he had been in college for 3 years, and he just flowed, you know, he showed flashes of superstardom, and it paid off, certainly. It was a gamble worth taking. But he still talked about the fact that he was married at the time, that he had a child at the time, that he was a more mature player. This is Riley at his old school best. So if you look at who Riley is going to target at 10, you've got to think, as much as we might like Kelly Oubre, as much as he might go with
we
a guy
love
like
Kelly Oubre.
Right. As much as we might think that Stanley Johnson is a good fit at 10, etc.
I don't.
We have to think of Riley. We have to put our Riley goggles on. Mm-hmm. Slick back our hair a little bit and think, who do I pick that fits that mold that I like so much? Who's a proven guy who's been in college for a lot longer than most of these other prospects? Who's a guy that might fit a need somewhat, and so he works kind of well here?
Sam Decker.
Is he a four-year? No, he's a three-year player.
Close enough.
No, you're right. I mean, it scares me because I completely dislike Decker's game.
We've talked about it, and I agree. I don't want them to do it. But, yeah, it goes back to that mock draft rule. It's just when you're doing a mock draft, don't think about what they should do. Think about what they will do. So we think that the Lakers should draft D'Angelo Russell, but they probably will draft Jahlil Okafor. We think that the Sixers should draft a point guard, but they're probably just going to draft Porzingis and stash him somewhere or whatever. They're probably just going to draft him.
You really have Russell higher on your board than Okafor?
Well, I'm just saying some people think that they should draft Russell, right? But they probably will draft Russell. I personally, yes, I have Russell higher because I think he just plays a more premium position. But I'm also higher on Okafor than a lot of people are. People are bashing his defense and that he's old-fashioned type player and all this stuff, but I just think he's like really dominant in the post. He could do that one thing really well, and I don't think he's as bad on defense. And people act like these guys don't get better. Like with NBA coaching, this guy would probably get better on defense. He's really athletic and good and talented. He's a basketball player. He's got great size. He'd probably get better. We were saying the same thing about Boogie Cousins, and he's gotten a lot better on defense. Anyway,
do they have NBA coaching in LA?
Good point. Probably not. So, but somehow DeMarcus Cousins got better in Sacramento, so I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the trainers that they have in the offseason.
Well, five coaches, right, in his career?
Yeah.
Five head coaches? That's a good start. That's a lot of stability right there. That's the kind of thing you're looking for in an NBA career.
Exactly. So, the Heat have good coaching. Maybe they'll just trade for Boogie. I've actually seen that idea floated out, like the 10th pick at Hassan Whiteside and something else for Boogie Cousins.
Okay, how about this craziness? Chris Bosh in the 10th pick? I mean, for Boogie Cousins? I don't know that
you
do.
What do
you
do with Whiteside?
Well, you put him at the power forward position. I
can't put Whiteside power forward.
No, Cousins.
You can't put him power forward.
I thought that's what the talk was. I thought they were going to do that for sure. I thought people envisioned him playing, shifting over to the power forward position. You don't think he could play it?
I don't think it's a good use of his skills.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I mean, he could dribble, and but he's like, he's too big. It would be weird. If he's your power forward, who the hell is your center? I mean,
yeah, look, I agree. I'm just floating it in the
theory. Like, if he's your power forward, the only guy you could put at center is like Nikola Pekovic. That would be awful. So,
I love Chris Bosh, everybody listening. If you're still listening at this point, let's not try to get rid of Chris Bosh.
So, yeah, exactly. But I've seen, anyway, we don't need to get into some wild speculation. We don't do that here on the Heat Check, clearly.
That's all we do.
That's all this podcast has been. So, all right, well, going back to the draft, before we sign off here, who do you want the Heat to pick? This is the night before the draft, so this is final. Who do you want the Heat to pick, and who do you think the Heat will pick? Do you want to say the first one on three? Do we want to go together on this?
I think everybody knows. If you've ever heard any podcast over the last month and a half, I think we're pretty clear on who we want them to pick, right?
Kelly Oubre, right? We're both in on Kelly Oubre. Okay, so we 100% both want them to pick Kelly Oubre. Let's say Booker's off the board. Oh, I wanted to float this idea by you.
Okay.
If Wade opts out, does it make sense? Or even if Wade doesn't opt out, let's say, okay, regardless of Wade, does it make sense now with the Hornets trading for Nick Batum? They don't have any small forward. They need a shooter. Booker will probably be there. We assume he'll be there, given the mock drafts that we've seen. Does it make sense to trade up one pick and trade a guy like McRoberts or Chalmers to move up one pick and get Booker? As opposed to stay at 10 and draft Oubre or Kaminsky or Stanley Johnson?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Again, I mean, I can't see that being a smart move. I mean, you'd have to really... Because I don't think if well, you see, that's the whole thing. This is, right? I mean, this is an argument we've seen a lot lately, is the fact that, like, the NFL model for the free agency period and the draft makes a lot more sense than this for the NBA. I mean, you'd want to have the framework of your veteran team in place before you make the selection of a draft pick. It's like almost like you're setting up your draft pick to be a bust in the NBA because you don't know what your team's going to be like when you make your pick. You know, I mean, we don't know if Wade's going to opt out by draft day tomorrow. So, is it worth trading a guy like McRoberts, who could be a very useful player with Wade on the roster and with a quality, you know, draft pick on the roster as well? Doesn't make sense, and that's why, you know, that's why I'm answering your question in the negative. But if you know that Wade's going to opt out and you're desperate at that point because you don't think you can sign a shooting guard that's going to match Wade's skill set, you can't afford Monte Ellis, etc. You need to make a move, and you want a guy with some upside. Devin Booker does make sense, but
I think also if they think that Dang is opting out, they might need to clear cap space to go and sign somebody to replace Dang. So now shedding salary with a guy like Chalmers or McRoberts, and getting rid of one of those salaries, and moving up to grab, you know, moving up one pick to get the shooting guard that you want. You know, this is assuming that, one, Dang is opting out and the Heat know that, and two, that they really, really like Devin Booker.
And they don't, right? But they don't know these things. They probably won't know these things tomorrow.
They won't know these things for sure. They probably already know if they like Devin Booker, but they also, they might be trying to get on the phone right now and see what Dang's thinking. So, because even if Dang opts out, they're not going to be able to re-sign him to $10 million a year. It's going to be a substantial amount less if he opts out. They just don't have the cap room they don't have bird rights on them. So, all right. So, who do you think they will take?
Kaminsky.
You do?
I do. I see them looking to move Birdman somewhere, somehow. Probably looking to move McRoberts as well. And then all of a sudden, you have this need in the front court where you have a guy who can space the floor who he's not necessarily a good ball handler, or he's an adequate passer, right, from the high post. He can finish at the rim. He's got some decent low post moves. He can hit from outside. He's got some three-point range, according to some scouts. I just don't see it being a consistent weapon for him. I think it's something that works. I just think he's too slow, and I don't think he's gonna. I think he's gonna be completely out of place. I'd love to see him thrive in the NBA. I'd love to see all these guys thrive in the NBA. But we know that of the 60 players drafted tomorrow, 5 of them are going to be all-stars, and the rest are probably going to be, you know, 20 of those maybe are adequate players, and then the rest will never even get into a game. Those aren't good odds.
Right. Well,
so.
What do you see if they draft Kaminsky, McRoberts is gone. There's just not enough room for both of them. They're too similar. But I think that they should draft Oubre, like we've said, and I think that they... I have no idea. I've had such a hard time reading these tea leaves. I have no clue. I think you're right. That Riley has liked long-term player like Wade, right? Beasley wasn't that, and that didn't work out. I really don't think that they would reach for Sam Dekker, but part of me says that it makes sense. I have no idea. I'll just go bold prediction that they move up with the Hornets and grab Booker. But I don't think that's what happens. But for the sake of this podcast, that's my prediction.
That's the kind of vague ending we love leaving our listeners with.
That's right. So, all right. How excited are you about the draft? What are you going to be? What's your drink of choice for the draft tomorrow?
Probably coffee, because I think it's going to be a long night for both of us.
Yeah, I think so too. So maybe an Irish coffee.
Nice.
All right. Thanks for talking with me, David.
You got it.
We'll look forward to the draft tomorrow. We'll have some reaction after the draft tomorrow night, so look forward to that. And thanks for listening to the Heat Check. Follow us on SoundCloud, listen to us on iTunes, and check out the website heatcheckpodcast.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening.
Booming out in South Burnett like Lou Will. 6 men like Lou Will. 2 girls and they get along like on Lou Will. I just got the new deal. I am in the Matrix and I just took the blue pill. No whole shit, no fucking whole shit. Say that for your shit. I don't need no fucking body. I run my own shit. I told you, thought I told you. You didn't listen. Fieri, I'm in the kitchen. I'm a magician. I'm on it. I'm like MacGyver. I'm Michael Myers. I kill careers and cut the lights off. The shit is frightening. I knew it would end up like this. I'm fucking psychic. Young, but I'm making millions to work a night shift.